It's one thing to get a resolution adopted, but then to implement it in practice is another thing. But our work as international organizations is promoting the unions around the world that this is an issue for trade unions.
When you're a teenager and wearing a way too tight waiter's uniform at a gay strip bar, you tend to draw attention.
You're a playwright, a filmmaker, and a novelist. You just can't pick a job.
The girl's got to make a living.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. California's Senate says yes to civil marriage equality. Activists work for global GLBT union solidarity. And a very funny novel chronicles a really nice prom mess. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 3rd, 2005. The California Senate this week approved a bill to open civil marriage to same-gender couples, the first state legislative body in the U.S. to do so. Passage came with the minimum required 21 votes in favor, all from Democrats. The 15 votes against the bill included all the Republican senators and one Democrat, while three Democrats abstained. The bill, spearheaded by openly gay Democratic Assembly member from San Francisco Mark Leno, moves next to the State Assembly, where in June a similar measure fell four votes shy of the minimum 41 votes in favor. One assembly member who was absent for that vote will support the bill this time, but whether three more yeas can be found is in doubt. Only 1 week remains in the legislative session. Even if the assembly approves the bill, Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger's spokesperson this week indicated he would not sign it into law, citing Proposition 22, a ballot initiative restricting marriage to one man and one woman that voters passed by a large margin in 2000.
Schwarzenegger already has another gay supportive measure to consider. The assembly gave final approval by 47-29 this week to a bill adding sexual orientation, gender identity, and marital status to categories protected under California's civil rights laws from discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodations. While state courts have long recognized the law as protecting these groups, the bill clarifies the existing law, particularly with respect to public accommodations, by making that explicit. The Senate approved the same measure last week by a vote of 22-15.
Both houses of the California legislature have also approved a resolution calling for repeal of the so-called Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy that excludes open gays and lesbians from the U.S. military, the first state legislature in the nation to do so. The resolution, introduced by openly lesbian Democratic Senator from San Diego Christine Kehoe, was approved by the Senate 23-14 this week and by the Assembly 44-33 last week. Resolutions do not require the governor's approval.
An unusual legal struggle for equality in Canada regards divorce on the grounds of adultery. The Federal Divorce Act does not actually include a definition of adultery, and the venerable common law definition used in British Columbia does not recognize extramarital homosexual acts. While Canada offers no-fault divorce following a year of separation, adultery is one basis for an immediate divorce judgment. In December, a heterosexual woman in Vancouver was denied that immediate judgment based on her husband's gay affair until the provincial trial court could hear arguments as to why his relationship should be recognized as adulterous. Those arguments were heard this week, and the immediate divorce was granted as Justice Nicole Garson changed the traditional definition of adultery. It's the first such judgment in the nation, and it's precedent-setting. Canada's Department of Justice was an intervener in the case, and its position was that the Divorce Act must be interpreted in a manner consistent with the nation's new marriage equality legislation and with the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, which ensures equal treatment regardless of sexual orientation. The woman was represented by lesbian gay rights activist attorney Barbara Findlay, who said the issue was of particular importance since Canada's legal same-gender marriages could be expected to lead to cases of homosexual adultery.
The relationship debate in Ireland this week centered on adoption. The Irish Catholic newspaper apparently broke the story that this year the Attorney General's office had interpreted the Adoption Act to mean that an individual could apply to adopt a child even if cohabiting with a partner, regardless of gender, although only legally married couples can adopt jointly. Apparently, the actual case the Attorney General's office had ruled on involved a woman in an unmarried heterosexual relationship. But the adoption board, which must approve all adoptions, whether the child is Irish or from another country, confirmed that at least three individuals in gay or lesbian relationships had applied to adopt children from other nations. Another source said an international adoption was nearly complete for a woman in a lesbian relationship. Even though the adoption board has approved only 66 individual adoptions over the past 13 years, some conservative activists demanded immediate legislation to prohibit adoptions by gays and lesbians. Lesbo-gay activists and others believe Ireland's equality laws would not allow that. Justice Minister Brian Lenihan said the government has no plans for legislation to open adoptions to same-gender couples.
Britain's government has launched consultation on major fertility law reforms, including opening equal access to treatments for lesbians and other women without male partners. A parliamentary committee had already harshly criticized the current requirement for physicians to consider if a child will have a father before administering treatment. The Department of Health was careful to note that even if the law changed, it did not necessarily mean that fertility treatments for women without male partners would be paid for by the National Health Service. Physicians are also concerned at health risks posed by the current lack of regulation of sperm donations arranged over the Internet, a system some lesbians have turned to since other options are often closed. The current Human Fertilization and Embryology Act is 15 years old and generally agreed to be lagging far behind the changing technology and social conditions.
Also in Britain, the city of Manchester swelled with pride this week, literally, as about a quarter million visitors came to the original home of Queer as Folk for 10 days of events. For the Pride Parade, crowd estimates ranged from 45 to 200,000. Of the thousands who actually marched, media coverage generally focused on just 10 soldiers representing the British Army in the parade for the first time as part of its first major recruitment drive at a lesbo-gay event. The Royal Air Force participated for the second time, this year presenting a float representing a fighter jet, which, to quote the London Times, featured an oversized cockpit. Pride Festival fundraising for lesbo, gay, transgender, and HIV charities set a new record.
In Canada, thousands watched the Pride Parade in Ottawa, whose marchers included a number of gay and lesbian couples who were celebrating their legal marriages. The upbeat event may have been a little happier for an attempt to set a record for the most same-gender couples kissing, a promotion staged by radio station Kiss FM that may have had 5,000 people smooching.
But there was no Pride Parade for Bulgaria's first national lesbo, gay, and trans festival after officials in the Black Sea city of Varna refused a permit. They cited a lack of clarity and precision in the application by the Bulgarian national lesbo-gay civil rights group Gemini. Mayor Kirill Yordanov also rejected Gemini's plan to set up two tents to distribute information in a public education campaign, saying it failed to meet the legal requirements of a cultural event. Gemini proceeded with other events planned for private venues while threatening lawsuits and vowing to hold a parade next year. Leaders of Bulgaria's Orthodox Church had publicly criticized the event as destructive of Christian values and had threatened to stage a counter-demonstration.
Miss Teen Bahamas beauty pageant winner Gary McDonald publicly identified herself as a lesbian this week as she held a press conference to claim the pageant had discriminated against her because of her sexual orientation. The pageant committee then announced that they were stripping her of her title because she'd held that press conference without their permission. The committee denied they'd made any such decision previously, although they admitted that they do not condone or support homosexuality. In fact, one pageant official was quoted as saying teens should not have an established sexual identity, and the pageant promotes abstinence. Stated principles of the pageant are shaping young Bahamian women in spirituality, social behavior, academics, and personal development. There are numerous claims and counterclaims between McDonald and the pageant, as she says she did not receive promised prizes or the chance to represent the Bahamas at an international pageant, while the Bahamas Pageant Committee says she failed to make scheduled appearances and that they had been privately investigating one individual's allegations that McDonald had sexually harassed her. McDonald's threatened lawsuit may be the only way the conflicting stories are ever sorted out, but for the teen queen to be a lesbian is pretty strong stuff in the Bahamas, where some religious groups have vigorously protested against gay cruise ships.
And finally, lesbi, gay, and trans people are among the many victims of Hurricane Katrina. New Orleans in particular has a long gay history and has some of the most gay-supportive ordinances of the U.S. South. But the state laws in the affected areas and for the most common destinations for the storm's refugees are some of the least gay-supportive in the nation and do not recognize same-gender relationships. This is bad news, especially for couples separated by the disaster, but also for couples who need assistance in its wake. That situation is exacerbated since much of the relief effort is by anti-gay churches. There are even some religious leaders who have blamed the hurricane on New Orleans' big annual gay party called Southern Decadence, which was canceled due to storm warnings. U.S. lesbi gay organizations have joined in a coalition called the Hurricane Katrina LGBT Relief Fund, which you can learn about at www.nyacyouth.org. Among mainstream organizations, the American Red Cross does not discriminate in its relief efforts.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 3rd, 2005, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
High comedy on the silver screen gave him his first success, and now he's turned literati with another hilarious story. You'll hear about a very queer traditional rite of passage later in the program. Is there a natural bond between organized labor and the fight for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender rights? The queer organizations and other advocacy groups represented at the United Nations Commission on Human Rights meeting earlier this year sought to highlight that connection during a panel entitled In Union, How Can Workers' Rights and the Struggle for Equality for Sexual Minorities Advance Together? Public Services International, or PSI, is one of the world's largest unions with over 25 million members. Its Secretary General Hans Engelberts was one of the panelists who addressed that question.
In PSI, we started to have a resolution adopted in 1993. It's one thing to get a resolution adopted, but then to implement it in practice is another thing. So we said we were for equality. Ever since the French Revolution, we have been for equality. But if you look around you, we're still a far end of equality on quite a number of areas. Last year, we had a pay equity conference here, particularly for women. All around the world, women still earn less salary than men. Now, on the issue of working for lesbian and gay members, it's easy at an International World Congress to adopt a statement. But it became quite clear when we had the first international conference in Amsterdam in 1998 that a lot of unions were not doing very much with regard to gay and lesbian members. In fact, when we had meetings in Amsterdam, most of the unions present there were either from public service unions or teachers unions. And most of them came from, let's say, Northern Europe. We have unions in the UK who have active group, in Germany, the Scandinavian countries, in Holland, in Canada, in Australia, New Zealand. And then the international trade union movement in its totality at that time was also not present. So if you want to implement some of the work, and that's why EI and PSI started working together, and Kurshad at that time was still the international secretary of Unison in the United Kingdom, so we asked him to make a publication. And that copy is now five. We had recently the forum together in Brazil, and there were more people. We have now a number of unions also in Latin America who have the courage, because it requires courage to come out and to declare yourself openly to be either gay or lesbian. because for a lot of people, it might damage their career. And we've had, in a number of unions, even presidents standing up and coming out. Trade unions are dependent on activists. Unfortunately, we're getting more activists, but our work as international organizations is promoting the unions around the world, and we have affiliates in 160 countries, that this is an issue for trade unions. We published this for the first time in South Africa. But apart from the unions in South Africa, most of the unions in Africa are afraid to touch the issue. They might have Mugabe on their neck in Zimbabwe because he has a strong position on this. We also see it in other societies where churches are trying to prevent that something happens. So this is a task that we still have to carry out. And we need to do is not saying it's just enough what happens in Europe and then they can make some progress. You saw what happened recently in the United States. That was not progress. That was going backwards. So there's still a lot of work to do for us. And the first thing for us is to convince unions that this is trade union work. Harassment, discrimination is trade union work. That's where both EI and PSI want to work in convincing some more of our organizations. And we try to do this also in working together with ILGA, with other organizations. We're very active in the women's movement because, again, there's not equality. We have been active for indigenous people because, again, then there's no equality. But we also have disability and other issues. So convincing our own trade unions that this is a trade union issue is one thing, but then trying to get the activists in the unions to do something. And as I said, it requires courage. And sometimes you need a couple who have to give each other support that this can be done. So the work that has been going on now for a number of years in Sydney, and I think next year there's another Workers' Out conference. For us, there's an interest to work together with those organizations, that more people will stand up for their rights, that they will become active in their unions. We get accused of promoting homosexuality, and we say we're not promoting homosexuality. We're trying to defend equal rights. We're trying to fight discrimination and harassment, and that is the task of trade unions. We hope that not only will we be able to promote this further, but perhaps to also help organizations in saying, now how do you start this work? How do you do this? How do you get people not to be afraid of the climate in which they're living, to come out, to show yourself to be an activist, to fight for these rights? And in some parts of the world, it is easier than in other parts. But we feel it also is our responsibility to try to assist as possible so that some of the very nice sounding statements and resolutions that we adopt can finally be realized in practice. We were happy also that at the last ICFTU Congress, which took place in December, some of the trade union confederations have taken it up now and want to create networks. Because, as I said, in public services and teacher unions, there is already the ground to do some work. But in a lot of other unions, particularly in the manufacturing industries, they do not consider this one of their priorities. And that's where also we still have to do a lot of work.
Hans Engelberts, Secretary General of Public Services International, spoke at a panel during the United Nations Commission on Human Rights entitled In Union, How Can Workers' Rights and the Struggle for Equality for Sexual Minorities Advance Together? His comments were recorded and edited by This Way Out correspondent Uma Kali Shakti, who also attended the meeting as the Pacific Regional Representative of the International Lesbian and Gay Association. We'll hear from another panelist, Anna Biondi of the International Confederation of Free Trade Unions.
With political and trade unions and other links, you know, you can make the issue of equal rights and non-discrimination go through and people recognize the value of persons.
Next time on This Way Out.
You're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine, brought to you by you. Your charitable donations keep this program on the air. We've produced some special CDs to say thank you to our supporters, featuring queer history, reviews of LGBT music, and behind-the-scenes looks at relevant movies and TV shows. You can also now get CDs of our regular program by subscription, and be sure you never miss a week of This Way Out. For all the details, please visit our website at thiswayout.org. You can also demonstrate your solidarity by taking part in an online benefit auction. Look for the This Way Out area at alternabid.com. Again, to find out more about special CD thank you gifts, subscriptions, and the auction, please do log on to thiswayout.org, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA.
This Way Out listener Dr. Robert Simmons, Jr. of Dayton, Ohio, in honor of his mother, Mabel Simmons, has issued a donor matching challenge to supporters of this program. Please check out the new information on our website, www.thiswayout.org, to see how your help to keep This Way Out on the air will mean twice as much to us. Thank you.
It's raining.
Queer indie filmmaker Brian Sloan may be best known for his screwball wedding comedy, I Think I Do. This Way Out's Steve Pride says Sloan's debut novel, A Really Nice Prom Mess, skewers another heterosexual tradition.
I have to admit that Brian Sloan's 1998 feature film, I Think I Do, is one of my favorites. And his short films, Pool Days and Bumping Heads, are also fantastic. So it should have come as no surprise that his new book is the funniest read of the year.
I'm Brian Sloan, filmmaker and writer. I'm the author of A Really Nice Prom Mess from Simon & Schuster.
And what is the book about?
One night at the prom in which the lead character's date finds out that he's dating another guy. And when she finds this out, she's not too happy about it because she thought she was going to get laid. Basically, the night kind of gets worse from there. It's an all-night-long adventure through the prom and some of the seedier parts of Washington, D.C. as his life kind of implodes because of this secret being revealed.
What inspired this?
It basically came from not my senior prom experience, actually, but I had gone to another formal dance when I was in high school. And when I went to pick up my date for the dance, she was a little bit drunk. And, you know, I never really found out why she was. And we actually, once we got to the dance, we sort of parted ways because we clearly weren't getting along. So this incident or this idea kind of had been in my head for a while as an interesting jumping off point for a story.
This would make such a wonderful movie. And I know the perfect director. There was this guy who did a movie called I Think I Do.
Yeah, I've heard his work is quite comic and, you know, funny. And yeah, well, it's funny, actually. This whole thing started out as a movie idea. It was a treatment I did for New Line right when I got out of film school. And they thought the whole thing was just too gay. This was like 1995 in the pre-Will and Grace era. So I sort of put it in a drawer and kind of forgot about it. And then I had a meeting with Simon & Schuster about writing some books for them. And I kind of pulled this out of the drawer and said, oh, what do you think about this idea? I sort of pitched it to them as 16 Candles meets After Hours, the Scorsese film where Griffin Dunne is sort of going on this all-night-long adventure in Manhattan and can't get home. And it sort of takes its cues from the John Hughes teen stuff, but also from that sort of like all-night-long genre of film where you're kind of following a character in real time.
And now Brian Sloan, reading from his novel, A Really Fine Prom Mess. At this point in the story, our hero Cameron has abandoned his drunken date, had a fist fight with his secret boyfriend, fled in disguise with a drug dealer, only to find himself in his first gay bar. And all of this happens before things really get out of control.
I ordered a Coke, not wishing to break any more laws for the evening. Sitting there by myself at the bar at Secrets, I decided that I would keep to myself. Let me tell you, this was not easy. When you're a teenager and wearing a way too tight waiter's uniform at a gay strip bar, you tend to draw attention. So in less than a minute, one of the strippers was hovering above me. Again, I looked to Tony Soprano's uncle behind the bar for help. If you give him a tip, they'll leave you alone, kid, offered the bartender. Realizing I still had Dimitri's dollar bill in my left hand, I slipped it into the beefy dancer's sock without even looking up at him. Sure enough, his tan, muscled legs sauntered down the bar, seeking more attentive customers. A few minutes later, however, there was another pair of socks straddling my soda. Unfortunately, I was plumb out of petty cash, my dad's Benjamin tucked into my tux, which Dimitri was still wearing in his office somewhere in the back of the building. Then I remembered the tip I'd accidentally received back at the Willard. I have to say, there was a twisted yet divine irony that this elderly Texan's $20 bill was going to end up as part of some male stripper's booty. Deliciously pleased by this fact, I stuffed the crumpled bill into the dude's right sock in hopes that he would move along. Yet this time my tip had the opposite effect, as the dancer crouched down right in front of me. With his privates bunched into a glittery gold spandex pouch at eye level, this go-go gay just sat there, bouncing on his thighs and smiling at me. Unlike most of the dancers at Secrets, who were muscle freaks with enormous shaved heads and bulbous arms that were the size of my waist, this guy, who'd stopped in front of me, was refreshingly funky-looking. He was uber-skinny, with a build only slightly taller than mine, but not any more filled out. He had a rosy, open face with pinkish skin, his face topped off by a shock of blonde hair, most of it sticking skyward. With earrings in both ears, pirate style, and a sparkling stud glamming up the left side of his nose, he had some bad boy bling bling going on, too. If it wasn't for his lack of clothes, you might mistake him for the bassist in a glam rock band with a name that would make your parents freak out. Maybe something like, I don't know, Glitter Buns? Anyway, as he bumped and ground away to a Cher song, I decided that a simple hello might be in order. He didn't say anything back, however. He just nodded, his smile growing bigger and more intent. It was a blinding Cheshire Cat grin with two matching movie star creases that framed it beautifully. Wow. I tried again to say hi, this time speaking louder to be heard over the din of the Cher. Still nothing. Then I tried a more conversational what's up, which also fell flat. Finally, instead of getting a response from the dancer, the bartender replied for him. Hey kid, he can't hear you. I know, I said. Can you turn the Cher down? The bartender looked at me like I had asked him to concoct a Sex on the Beach or something. Then I realized why. As the dancer recognized someone entering the bar, he started signing to the new patron. Buck, said the bartender, is deaf, kid. He can't hear the music or a goddamn word you're saying. Okay, wait a minute, I thought. A deaf go-go boy who's giving me the full-on flirt named Buck? Someone is definitely not in Kansas anymore.
What do you want readers to take away from the book?
On a bigger sense, the book is definitely meant to be entertaining and meant to be this sort of wild tale of prom night gone wrong. But in a way, the book is almost not so much about coming out, but about just being honest with not only him, his friends, but really himself. If there's a message to the book, it's that the truth will set you free.
You're a playwright, a filmmaker, and a novelist. You just can't pick a job.
I like to tell my friends a girl's got to make a living.
This has been a conversation with screenwriter, playwright, filmmaker, and novelist Brian Sloan. Besides his brilliant first novel, A Really Nice Prom Mess, he has a new film called WTC View, based on his play of the same name, and it's currently screening at film festivals around the country. More on that when he visits next. For more information on this story or queer cinema, always visit prideonscreen.com. I'm Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Yes, it's raining on prom night. Oh, my darling, what can I do? I miss you. It's raining rain from the skies, and it's raining real tears from my eyes.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, John Beaupre, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, Uma Kali Shakti, and Steve Pride contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Don't forget you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are underwritten by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners. Thank you. Your help to keep this program on the air will now mean twice as much to us. Please log on to thiswayout.org for all the details. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We all thank you for listening on KAZU Pacific Grove, California, WRUW Cleveland, Ohio, Arrow FM Masterton, New Zealand, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we know you'll stay tuned.